And the Councilman Clint, is that my baby, Clint?
The House Transportation will come to order. Welcome, everybody. We have another informational hearing, and we're getting close to running out of them, and we'll start actually having some bills. So with that, we'll probably have another shorter meeting, and it's on the Transit Division. And we're going to have another day where we'll have a number of transit agencies come in so we can get a feel for the scope and size of a lot of the agencies and how they do their jobs. But today we're going to hear from the department. And so if Michael would like to come up, great. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Michael Ward. I'm the administrator of the Public Transit Division of ODOT, and I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to provide this overview of the programs that we administer. But before we get started, and certainly with the chair's consent, we have a small video to play. It's called A Matter of Independence. It's a year or two old, but I think it helps set the stage for my discussion of the programs that we administer at the Public Transit Division. So if we have this choreographed correctly, I think all I have to do is press a play button. You never know about technology.
It's Wednesday morning in the Eastern Oregon community of Halfway.
Hello, Marine. How are you today?
Where do we need to go today?
And Dave Myhill is the most popular guy in town.
D and B.
Dave is a part-time driver for Community Connection of Baker County. On Wednesdays, he transports riders on what the locals call the senior bus. It's 50 miles from Halfway to Baker City. Another 50 miles back. And each leg of the journey is an adventure.
In Eastern Oregon especially, it's a long ways between communities. And in the wintertime, it's an exceptionally long ways between communities. And so that one day a week they get on the bus to come to Baker is the epitome or the zenith of their life for that week.
Baker County has for many years been one of the higher percentages of seniors in population. Right now, we're looking at about 24% of those over 60, and I think we're about 19% and have been about that for people over 65.
Most of these individuals are senior citizens, and some of them are in their 90s. We try to make it comfortable for them, and relaxed atmosphere for them, so they're not worried and they're not concerned about if they're going to make it to their appointment on time or if they're going to be left or how long they have to wait.
Hello, I'm Delma Herdrick, and I'm 10 or so. I use the bus most of the time when I'm coming out to Baker. Mostly doctor's appointments. I have had recently doctor's appointments with my eyes, and I am gradually getting macular degeneration in my right eye, which I feel if it gets too much worse, I won't be able to drive.
In the state of Oregon, we know that we have roughly 500,000 people over the age of 65. And roughly 25% of those folks can't drive. We know as we look out 20 years, that number will double. There are folks with physical disabilities, vision impairments. They can't drive. So public transit, that's the way they'll be able to get to the grocery store, to the doctor's appointment, to their worship places, to their jobs. That's very important for those citizens.
Ready to go, Dave?
Yeah, we're ready to head out.
One stop.
Curry County is another area where distances between communities are long and critical services few and far between. So residents living along Highway 101 rely on the Coastal Express, which travels 110 miles from North Bend to Brookings four times a day.
Good morning.
74-year-old Bill Dooley is a regular on the Port Orford to Brookings leg.
I commute about 64 miles each way each day that I work down here, and I work down here 5 days a week in most instances. What have we found out on that 22 unit?
Bill manages Curry Public Transit, which consists of the Intercity Coastal Express and in-town on-demand vehicles. Both services run 6 days a week, and according to Bill, demand is high.
We are almost 50% population over 60 at the present time in the Brookings Harbor area. The total in the county, I have been told, runs between 35 and 40% population over the age of 60.
See you in a little while. I rely on the Dollar Ride. They take me out to the beauty shop, then I call 2:30 to go home. And everybody knows that I ride it, so if I'm 5 minutes late or 10 minutes early, it's fine.
You got Bill, right?
I did get Bill, yes.
Our service allows them to continue to be independent far longer than they would be able to be if we were not in existence in the area. It's vitally important that these people be able to hang on, so to speak, to that independence as long as they can.
Wayne, this is exciting.
For Bob Bergman of Eugene, independence means the ability to get to work on time.
Bob is a pretty miraculous young man for the difficulties that he has, I think. He's now 55 years old, so we have gone through 55 years of dealing with differences. Because he was a preemie, he had the cerebral palsy, and did take him in for physicals, of course, and was referred to an ophthalmologist. And I suppose that that was a very landmarking day, the day that I was told he was blind hard.
Today, Bob works at Oregon Research Institute. It's a job he loves and a job that benefits his community.
We've seen a transformation of Bob that's just been unbelievable. He likes to have fun. He likes to do a lot of things. And the Lane Transit District's opportunity of riding the bus has allowed him to do that.
We want them, and they want to be meaningful and productive members of society. We know that public transportation, or the lack thereof, is a great barrier to getting people to work. Thus, it's a challenge to acquire a meaningful employment.
If I didn't have the city bus, I'd be stuck at home.
Doing what?
Oh, just playing with my CB radios.
It's all a big pie where you cut it into, you know, living, working, and social. And it takes transportation to do every single one of them.
I think that you'll realize very quickly the number of people in your family probably need some kind of assistance. And where family members or friends are unable to provide that service, that's where the Public Transit Division and our program step up to try to fill that void.
The main source of funds that's available for community transportation services are federal funds, which we can flex out of the highway appropriations, and those funds primarily are used for equipment acquisitions. We flex as much as we can. We work with the local districts to maximize our ability to stretch those funds as far as possible, but we never have enough.
It's more than tires, gasoline, a vehicle. It's a social support system that is just critical.
It just opens doors that we never would have imagined. And if we can make that happen for folks, all folks, not just folks with disabilities, then it will be a much better community.
It's good stuff.
Thank you. Turn to my prepared testimony. I'm going to do the best I can not to read this to you. I don't think I want that. Although somewhat nervous, I may have to fall back on some of the written text. Sometimes in describing what something is, it's maybe helpful to describe what it isn't. And so I'm going to do that just a bit. The Public Transit Division doesn't operate a single bus. We don't provide a single ride, nor do we maintain a single bus shelter. We leave that to about 120 public transit providers across the state. But never fear, I still get invited to all the parties. And that's because we provide a significant amount of the funding that those public transit providers use to deliver those services. What we do is manage the state and federal funds that come into the Oregon for public transit. We determine someone's eligibility to receive those funds. We write grants, so there's a legal document that exists between us and those grantees on how the money gets used. We provide technical assistance. I'm sure you all realize that the federal programs are very complex, and we do our best to try to help the local providers navigate through those rules and regulations so that they can use the money to the best possible advantage. And we also try to serve as an advocate for public transit in the state. We try to encourage the use of public transit. We try to encourage alternatives to just driving alone and use those efforts to help reduce congestion, mitigate some environmental impacts, and try to improve the efficiencies of Oregon highways. Something else around Public Transit Division that's important is that we are generally focused on two areas, and that's rural Oregon and those services that provide for the needs of older adults and individuals with disabilities. That doesn't mean that we don't have a strong working relationship with the large MPOs and the large transit providers like Lane, like TriMet, like Salem-Keizer. We help with their planning activities. We provide grants where their services qualify for the rural portions of their districts or services that are aimed at older adults and people with disabilities. But our general focus is on rural providers and those programs that meet the needs of older adults and individuals with disabilities. I'd spend just a second or two extolling the virtues of public transit. As you saw on the video, it's a clear necessity for the mobility of hundreds of thousands of Oregonians. Without public transit, lots and lots of folks wouldn't have a way to get to work, wouldn't have a way to participate in their community, and wouldn't have that vibrant life that others can so easily enjoy. I think public transit provides a very positive impact on a healthy community and a healthy Oregon through environmental elements of reducing carbon footprint and vehicle miles traveled, and helping not only ODOT but others try to achieve some of our environmental goals that we have. Turning to page two, at the top of page two, just briefly, in the last biennium 2005-2007, we managed 251 grants. And when I say we, public transit is 15 individuals strong, and quite honestly, some of the most dedicated, driven individuals within ODOT who are committed to this mission of providing public transit to those folks across the state who rely and depend on public transit. But a fairly small group of individuals, but nevertheless pretty strong and energetic. In the last biennium, there was approximately 240 million rides provided. Older adults and individuals with disabilities took about 35 million of those rides. 27 million occurred on a fixed route. And about 8 million used what was normally referred to as demand response or dial-a-ride transportation. Figure one shows how we get our money, and you'll see there that the federal funds account for about $45 million of our $65 million program, and state funds represent about $20 million of our program. These funds, on the federal side come from the Federal Transit Administration and some FHWA funds that ODOT flexes for the purposes of public transit, as you heard ex-chair Foster refer to. On the state side, those funds come from three sources. Cigarette tax revenues, 2 cents a pack. It's been 2 cents a pack since about 1992, I believe. The excess revenues that DMV collects for the issuance of state ID cards, and then non-highway use state gas revenues, and you'll see that in another chart labeled TOF, or the Transportation Operating Fund, and we'll get there in just a second. Moving to figure two, how do we use the funds? I'm going to walk through those slices of the pie, starting with a dark yellow and working our way around the pie to special transportation fund. In rural transportation, we have essentially three sources, all of them federal funds that provide federal funds for the purposes of transportation in rural Oregon. The non-urbanized area grant funds are distributed to 36 communities, typically counties or cities, or in some cases a county has sort of stepped back and the money is distributed directly to a nonprofit provider who has shown that they have the managerial and financial skills to manage the funds. Community Connections in Baker County is an example of that. But it's also important to note that the six urban areas get their money for their fixed route systems directly from the FTA, and my staff don't get involved in that direct relationship much at all. And I provide some examples of the rural non-urbanized area grants. Grant County, with a population of about 7,600 folks over 65, 8,000 annual trips between John Day and Bend. Bulk of those are medical trips, as you might guess. Bend being a fairly large medical facility in Central Oregon. Folks from John Day and other parts moving there to meet their medical needs. And the other example I've listed there is Lane Transit District, a very large district. You might think of the systems throughout Eugene, but they also support a number of smaller services that go out to Florence, such as called the Roadie Express, Cottage Grove, South Lane Wheels, and then within Eugene, the alternative work concepts, which you heard referenced, and others within Lane County. And then something we're quite pleased about, and that is our startup of the Snake River Transit System in Malheur County, started in September of this year. It's not only just a partnership between Malheur County, City of Ontario, and the public my public transit division staff, but we also partner with Treasure Valley Transit in Idaho to make that connection between Idaho and Boise. And we're actually quite pleased with how that has come to pass after several years of working on trying to make that happen. The second area where we have funding on the rural transportation side is the Job Access Reverse Commute Grant. That's called shorthanded JARC. Again, these are FTA funds, and they're primarily targeted for rural and small urban areas to provide funding for employment-related transportation for low-income and individuals with disabilities. Again, two examples there, one in Yamhill County, designing a job route specifically to meet the needs of people with developmental disabilities, and in Josephine County, Options for Southern Oregon provides rides for people with disabilities in connection with local job placement programs. And the third component of our rural program is the Rural Intercity Bus Program. Again, funded by the FTA. The purpose of that program is to promote inner-city passenger services that connect rural cities with the phrase of the, in the in the federal law is the next larger market area. So it's a Staten to Salem, it's Lapine to Bend, those kinds of services where we can provide intercity bus service and provide connecting services between bus routes, bus and rail, and bus and air airports. We have some examples I've listed there where Poly Transit Division and the Rail Division work hand in hand in providing intercity connections with Amtrak passenger rail with an Ontario to Bend leg, a Bend to Chomont leg, and then Astoria to Portland. And as we put this together, I did have to go back to my intercity passenger person and ask, Ontario to Bend Amtrak, and what he reminded me of is there's a leg from Bend to Eugene to tie in with the with Amtrak, and this was a leg that came about a number of years ago from Ontario to Bend, so that even in Eastern Oregon, if you chose to, you could ride the bus from Ontario and there make the connections and get to Eugene and catch an Amtrak bus. Another pilot project that we're quite proud of is we will soon enter into a contract for some new services in the Southern Oregon area connecting US 97, I-5, and the US 101 corridors. This was a pilot program FTA allowed states to enter into. It has to use with using Greyhound operating expenses as a way to us to leverage a match for this kind of route. We actually used our advisory committee to help us narrow the selections across the state where we might find the biggest benefit for this kind of service. And so you see there that it'll allow same-day round trips between Smith River, California, and into Klamath Falls and Medford. So we're pretty happy about that. I think we're a couple of months off from that starting, given the procurement and selection and contracting process, but the end is in sight. So I would think by early summer we'd actually have that service in place. The next piece of that chart was mass transit. These are flexed Federal Highway Administration dollars that ODOT flexes for the use of public transit, and we use those monies to help with vehicle replacement, for mass transit vehicle replacement. The next slice of that pie was planning, again, funded by the FTA. My staff helps provide technical assistance and expertise to providers around the state as they engage in planning activities. There are numerous planning requirements at the MPO level and others to indicate how you're using the federal funds that have been provided. We administer the pass-through funds that go to the metropolitan planning organizations and the cities listed there. But something that I'm really excited about is that one of the things that we'll undertake in the next biennium of 9/11 is an update to our current public transportation plan that is a component of the Oregon Transportation Plan, and that the current public transportation plan is quite out of date. It was written and approved in 1997, so we're more than a decade old. And so I look forward to next biennium taking on the task of updating that plan as part of the Oregon Transportation Plan. Continuing to move around the pie, the next slice is the transportation options and transportation demand management. This program funds those projects such as park and rides, rideshare programs, those programs that are used to provide Oregonians choices to driving alone. We have programs throughout the state that engage in those kinds of activities. We have a couple of examples that I've listed. If you've seen the Drive Less, Save More campaign in Portland, that's funded from our program. We're moving into our second or third year with that program and are seeing some really good results with that educational component of providing people with some options, giving them a chance to think about trip chaining and reducing the number of of optional trips they take. And then something that my staff are really pleased about was this summer's governor's commute challenge, in which by just suggesting to state employees on the Capitol Mall that they had options to driving alone, such as park and ride, shuttle bus, the existing carpools and van pools that were in place, and even walking and biking, over a three-month period, we were able to reduce the carbon emissions by about 600,000 tons. Nope. 600,000 pounds. 600,000 pounds. But for just a very quick startup and just essentially an educational campaign, we thought that was very quite an achievement for us. Now the other next large slice of that pie is our special transportation program. That's really a mixing of federal funds and our state program to provide support for transportation services that are directly targeted for older adults and individuals with disabilities. The funds can be used to purchase vehicles, support the operations of the service provider, update computer systems, and those sorts of things. The funds are generally distributed to our counties and our the nine federally recognized tribes in Oregon, as well as some transportation districts. If you look at Figure 3, the special transportation revenue trend, we've laid out for you a multi-biennial look at and this is just the state transportation fund. These aren't the federal dollars. You go back to 99 and 01 and the 01, 03, you see that a bulk of that program was funded out of the general fund. That changed in 03-05, where the revenues for ID cards and the transportation operating fund were dedicated, were moved to dedicate for public transit, and then the SIG tax has been a sort of a constant, at least going back that long. And so you see, what we're trying to demonstrate here is that the revenues for this program have remained fairly flat and are projected to go down a bit next biennium. But as you read the note, the number of Oregon's older adults has increased by 12.5% during from 2002 to 2007. So, not trying to be too blunt, but the state program targeted at the older adults and people with disabilities remaining fairly flat, but yet the demand for those services will go up as over the next decade or so. Moving to issues, trends, and challenges.
Michael?
I'm sorry?
Sorry. Can you maybe, just for everybody's information, because I don't know how much everybody knows and I'm used to some of these terms, but the TOF, those funds, can you explain to people what they are?
Yes. People pay the gas tax on gases that they use for purposes other than highway or road travel. So when you fill up the gas tank for your lawnmower or your riding tractor or those kinds of things, technically you don't need to pay the gas tax on that amount of gas, and you can actually apply for a refund of those if you keep good records. Yeah, we're not so good record keepers. And so this fund accumulates, and we use, I believe it's Oregon State University, who does the analysis for us and then determines out of the gases sold what amounts would have been not subject to the tax. And so that amount gets put into this transportation operating fund, and from that fund, the amounts that you see here are then dedicated to public transit. I'm not sure that was as clear as I would have liked.
So every machine that I own that runs on gas that isn't used to transport me or something down the highway, I can write every penny or a certain amount of that. I can get a refund on but 20, is it 24 cents? What's our, well, there's our state tax per gallon.
I should know that.
Well, anyway, either way.
I think it's 24 cents.
Either way, whatever it is, I can get that total amount if I have the receipts refunded to me.
That's my understanding. That's the, I'm not quite, I think you work through ODOT's fuel tax division, but I believe that's correct, sir.
So, and then you have some formula that says how much of that is not requested to be refunded. And I would be interested in finding out how do you determine that number.
Chair Beyer, Representative Shuffler, I'll have to get back to you
on that.
I really don't know that formula either. The two or three sentences I use to describe that is about the depth of my knowledge about the Transportation Operating Fund and how it works. I try to focus my energies on getting more of it for public transit, but I will get you the information on how that fund works.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
And so if you hear the phrase lawnmower fund,
yes,
that's what you'll.
That's another offhand comment about how that fund is referred to. Thank you, Chair Beyer. Lawnmower fund. Moving to issues, trends, and challenges, as I've mentioned before, the growing population of older adults. There was a budget note last biennium directing the department to work with DHS to look at what that need and demand might be, and also to try to come up with some funding sources for that. We worked with our partners at the Association of Oregon Counties and engaged Portland State University and to do that work for us. Took most of last year to do that. We presented those findings to the joint committee meeting back in November that laid out what those demands look like. I've listed just a couple of the key bullets there for you. Today's population of older adults and people with disabilities is about 22%. PSU study indicates that will rise about 28% by the year 2030. Something they stumbled across that was, we knew it was there, but just didn't realize how significant. There's a huge unmet need for public transit now amongst those two groups of folks. If we were to try to meet a portion of it, it comes out to an additional number of rides. And for those who would be interested in that study, I can certainly provide that for you. There's a 10 or 12 page executive summary that really walks through all the key findings, and so you don't have to worry about the 3 pounds of report and wade through. But they did a PSU, and the professors involved did just quite an outstanding job trying to estimate need and then turn that into cost. What those costs might look like out over time to 2030, and I'd be happy to either electronically or hard copy provide that report to members of the committee if you'd like.
Representative Edwards, did you have
No, I was just going to request that you send that to the committee and also a hard copy to Patrick for distribution to
absolutely
the
can.
Members.
I think you'll find it quite illuminating the just based on future demand. The numbers are pretty significant in those two groups of those groups of Oregonians and some of the demand. Second bullet there under issues and trends is the increased demand for services. clearly, we saw that last summer when prices spiked so high. Most public transit providers that I was in contact with at various meetings and whatnot reported more than double-digit increases in riders. While we have seen a decrease in some of those prices, the numbers haven't fallen off all that much. So there is still a strong demand for public transit. I think it just goes back to the old adage that once they gave it a try, they realized this wasn't so bad. It got me to work or got me downtown. Nice, clean buses, friendly driver, saved me some money, and helped out with the environment by not having a drive alone. Single-purpose trip. That was really a two-sided coin as you and I were faced with the increasing fuel costs and looking to how to do something different. So were all the public transit providers around the state. they also saw the pinch as their costs for diesel and gas and other other fuels went up. And how do you try to cope with significant increases in demand for your service at the same time your budgets are relatively flat, but your fuel costs are spiking pretty heavily? So that's an issue and trend that we need to work for. Or watch for. The next one I listed there was lack of public awareness. Public Transit Division just recently did a survey of customers and stakeholders around the state in part in preparation for updating the Oregon Public Transit Plan to get a feel for what the public thinks and are there certain areas that we want to focus on. But one of the findings that came through is that people still don't realize and aren't aware of the public transit opportunities in their community. Now, part of that may be that as budgets get tight, money goes to the fuel and goes to operator pay and those sorts of things. And so brochures and marketing and those kinds of outreach things just take a back seat as they try to make every penny stretch as far as they can. And so, but it was surprising that there's a large number of people still don't realize the opportunities afforded to them by the public transit systems available in their area. And I talked just briefly about price increases with fuel, insurance, going green. That is, if you want to seriously consider alternative vehicles, there's a significant upcharge to electric hybrid or some of those kinds of sorts of costs. Most of the districts would love to be able to move in that direction, but the tight budgets just make it a really tough financial decision to make. And the other pressing issue for a lot of our providers is the provision of the federally required ADA services are growing very, very significantly. A current fixed route bus trip, $2, $3, $4. But once you move into a demand response or a dial a ride a trip, you're probably in the 20s. $22, $26, $30 range. And so as you maintain your fixed route service and then the ADA services that you're required to maintain, they become a pretty expensive component of your service, and those costs are going up. A lot of our large providers are really struggling with how to maintain their fixed route system and continue to provide the what's called the ADA paratransit services that they're required to do. I don't want to leave a grim note, but talk a little bit about public transit successes over the last biennium. You do see that we've delivered, or not we, our providers around the state have delivered 7 million rural and special transportation trips. Again, as you saw in the film, these are critical trips for people for medical reasons and employment and other kinds of reasons that without public transit they'd not be able to take those trips. We have used our funds to provide for passenger shelters and travel training and other items that improve transportation services. Two successes on the top of page 9, using our funds to improve and create services in Central Oregon with cooperation and in partnership with the Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council, that now you have services between Sisters and Redmond and Bend and Terrebonne and Prineville, not only for those folks that need to get work back and forth, but also as an alternative to what we call choice riders who make the choice to use public transit instead of their own car. And then Lane Transit District has taken on the challenge of developing a call center that will coordinate all Medicaid rides with other special need trips. Pretty tough job. It's looking at individuals, helping them assess what their needs are. How do we combine that with other trips? Ultimately, if we can actually work and train and provide resources to have individuals use the fixed route system rather than dial a ride, that saves a tremendous amount of money. But they've stepped up to the challenge and are working on how to do a one stop shopping, one call center to help with all of that. So in summary, the Public Transit Division, we provide financial assistance, advocacy, and technical assistance to communities and local transportation providers as we go about trying to provide public transportation around the state. And with that, Chair and members of the committee, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Representative Widener.
Now, does this include TriMet as well or just rural transportation?
We do work with TriMet on various grants that qualify for rural or older adults and people with disabilities kinds of projects. But by and large, TriMet deals works directly with the FTA for the vast bulk of their funding.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm just sorting this out. So right now you have about $7 million, it looks like, on your rural, and it looks like you're short about, am I looking at this right? I'm just trying to do quick math. You're saying 9% more is what you need from your regular budget? I'm reading this on the other side. And the average ride's $2 to $3 right now for local?
For a fixed route ride, if you were to stand here at a bus station and get on a bus, those costs are about $2 or $3, maybe a little more than that. The comparison Chair Beyer, Representative Widener, I'm sorry. God, I'm going to hear about that. comparing that with a demand response where it's usually a vehicle being sent directly to your place of residence, curb-to-curb service, those run closer to the mid-20s, high $20 cost. So what the larger providers, the TriMets and the Salems, work really hard at is providing training and other support. And in fact, you might have caught it on the video where the person getting off in at the central station in Lane Transit was actually greeted by a volunteer who helped him get to his next ride or his next connection. The purpose is fixed route is a lot less expensive to provide. But I think I've missed your question. I'm sorry.
Just so we don't have to go through this, what I'm trying to do is figure out how to help you guys achieve the financial goals that you have set out here. Is what I'm wondering if you could get to us and even the committee would be each one of your ridership per route and how many people, so we can see where the weaker routes are, the stronger routes, and get a good idea of what's there. And then I would be interested in just sitting down and looking to see how all of this pencils out and how we can come up with a solution to help you achieve your 9%.
Yeah, I'm going to have to... I'm going to think about that for a bit. Each of the individual providers, we gather up that information. There's no question about that. We have the number of rides and who provides the rides. In terms of the assessment of weaker routes or routes that might not have as much demand as others, I think that almost falls back to the individual provider and their local decision making process on what routes to continue and what routes to eliminate. For example, here in Salem, when their bond measure didn't pass, they just eliminated Saturday and Sunday service. I think in Lane, Lane Transit District, with a similar budget condition, if there's not help coming, I believe what's on the table is Sunday service as a way to try to live within their budget. But maybe we can talk offline so I can get a feel for what information I can provide to answer your questions. Be glad to do that.
I'm just looking here. If the $2 to $3, with the latte costing $4, I'm just looking if we add 25 cents, because our budget situation here at the state level as well.
Yes.
And to ask people to step up to the plate that aren't using it usually doesn't go over as well. But to put another quarter on ridership, things like that, could be things that we could look at, because whether it's $2 or $2.25, it's not going to affect people that much, is what I'm kind of getting at. So thank you, Chair.
Representative Benz, and then I have Representative Edwards and Representative Call, and then Schaffler. You want to go on the list?
Okay.
thought this was going to be short.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Michael, I just wanted to thank your organization for the work you did on the Snake River Transit. It's a great big deal in Malheur County and a huge success, and a lot of real positive remarks made as a result of that program. So I just want you to know that. I must have heard about it, I'm going to say at least 24 times, all good remarks. So I really appreciate the hard work of working with Idaho and making it happen.
And Chair Byer, Representative Benz, thank you very much. I'll make sure my staff, who really did the work in pulling that together, make sure they get your appreciation and pat on the back. They worked really hard and took a while, but they were really committed to. They knew there was a project there. They knew there was demand. They knew there was service, and they were creative enough to work with Idaho and Malheur County and Malheur Council on agency. Pull all that together and end up with a really successful system. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious, Mr. Ward, if you can tell us what the projected budget gap is between the current EBL and reaching this goal of increasing ridership by 9% to capture about a third of the estimated unmet need. What revenue increase would you need to see in order to achieve that goal?
We have not. I'm sorry, Chair Byer, Representative Edwards. We've not done that analysis yet. We'd have to do that. One of the issues is the mix of federal funds and state funds to do that. But we can certainly look at that question and try to come back with a number for you.
Okay. Follow up.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then I'd be curious to know kind of the range of support for the various providers. In other words, what percentage of their budget does your support represent in terms of providing their service?
Okay.
And, of course, the reason I ask that question is because in these tough economic times, as we begin to make budget decisions, it'd be good to understand the relative sensitivity of your partners' programs to budget cuts.
Yes.
Representative Call.
Yeah. And I'm sorry if this got covered. I had to step out, and I imagine maybe somebody asked this question. So if it did, you can move past it quickly, and I'll get the answer from someone else. But my question is, if you remove out from the budget, from the cost of providing service, the people who are riding the Lyft program and the TriMet Lyft or the ADA program, the ADA-required kind of accessibility programs, if you remove that out of the budget and what that cost, how much, what's the cost that's left, and how much does the individual ticket pay for with regards to that bus service? And I'm just trying to follow up on a line of questioning that Representative Widener put forward. It has always been my belief, I'm a public transportation user, that I pay my way in paying $86 a month right now for a bus pass to ride TriMet. And that for those people who have disabilities or those people who are seniors who cannot pay their way, potentially, that maybe all of us are sharing that cost, or rather the cigarette smokers are sharing that cost, but that we're making two different policy decisions. And so those people who are capable of paying and for using the general services, they're paying their own way, and that people who have greater services and need society as a whole to help them with their issues, then we're all coming together to subsidize that. And so I'd love to see numbers, or maybe you can answer that question, if that is in fact the way this is budgeted and paid for.
Chair Byer, Representative Call, I'll have to get back and pull those numbers apart and provide that information to you. I don't have it off the top of my head.
And at first, sorry, Madam Chair. And at first blush, though, the thing that we're talking about here that is so very expensive per ride, and the thing that we need to deal with, and actually need to fund more. Right, to be compliant is things that aren't fixed route or light rail systems. That's correct, right?
Special needs.
Special needs.
Special needs.
Right.
Chair Byer, Representative, if I understand your question correctly, yes, that's what we're charged with, providing transportation for those populations, older adults and people with disabilities.
Right.
And because of a number of reasons, they tend to migrate to Dial-A-Ride, which is the more expensive ride, in lots of cases for very good reasons, where you have a large system like a TriMet, or they have an active intervention program to try to provide assistance and training to get those riders to try fixed routes, see if they can use that so that they can try to manage their costs better. But no, I understand what you're asking. We'll have to pull those numbers apart in terms of the budgets around fixed route versus Dial-A-Ride and where that comes from.
Great, thank you.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. I'm not sure. I would imagine my taxes I pay on my cigars go to help pay this out, pay for this service, so now I won't feel so guilty about lighting up. But I'm under tremendous pressure to quit. But anyway, that was a comment, Madam Chair. But seriously, though, when you said Salem, when their bond measure failed, you said they canceled the service. That is that all mass transit service on Saturdays and Sunday, or just this public all mass transit service?
I think it's all mass transit.
There's no mass transit service on Saturday and Sunday.
I'll double check, sir. Chair Byer.
We're getting no. And may I, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Well, my mom, I've expressed this before. My brother moved her to Oregon last year, and her dialysis center is in Beaverton, and he lives 5 blocks away from her house. And generally, him, or my sister-in-law, God bless her, or my nephew will take my mom. And every now and then I take her to dialysis. And I see the TriMet bus pull up there and pick folks up. What these folks in Salem, then, do they just have to find alternative source of transportation for when this service was cut off? Is that correct?
Chair Byer, Representative Schaffler, yes. Unless in your particular case, if the customer qualifies for a demand response or Dial-A-Ride service, then they can still call and make appointments. I'd have to double check to see if Salem Chrysler provides that service on weekends. But the service is still available to the individual during their normal hours of operation. I just don't know if they provide that on weekend service.
The
mass transit component has been eliminated.
Yeah, forgive me, just for clear up, Madam Chair. Yeah, I was specifically talking about Saturdays, because I usually take her on a Saturday, because I have, that's when I mostly have time off. Unless we're not in session, then I can go away from my arduous work at my house, keeping my wife happy, and take my mom to dialysis. So
that is a full-time job, I understand. let me double-check on...
Thank you.
Chair Byer, let me double-check with Salem Chrysler about the availability of demand response on Saturdays.
And, Madam Chair, one more thing, if I may. But the reason, I'm serious, that's unfortunate, because there's God knows how many people take advantage of this service and need this service and may well not have anyone else to fall back on.
That's
and
correct.
We need to be conscious of that. So.
And we do have someone from the Transit Association that I think has an answer to that
knows.
Question.
Right.
They're
going
to have their shot later on, but
okay.
He can answer this specifically for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, General Grant has identified exactly what the problem is.
Representative Schaffler. Identify yourself.
Roger Martin. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Transit Association. Part of the reason that Salem Area Transit gave up Saturday is that relieves them of the federal obligation to provide that kind of service you're talking about on that weekend.
Huh.
Because they are simply financially so strapped, they've tried twice to get a property tax levy passed that would continue the service. Each of the fixed route carriers provides a big part of the funding, and we've got a sheet of paper that answers part of the question. State only pays less than 10% of the cost of these rides, or fares. Fares pay 7 or 8% of the
right.
The rest is done, majority of it by the local provider. And Salem Area Transit simply can't do it. They don't. Their budget is so strapped. So they had to give up Saturday service. They didn't have Sunday service. Now they're down to 5 days a week. And it's similar in Medford and some of the other areas. TriMet, Lane Transit is talking about having to give up one of the days. That's the funding crisis we're in.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to say how important these services are in my district. I have Tillamook and Clatsop who have, most particularly, the rural areas of my district, and they're just so happy to have these services. And they have begun, thanks to Roger and Kelsey and their group, and your agency, I'm sure, of course, and our federal delegation, they have realized a new transit center that they've mm-hmm. built, and more people are using, now that they've got it, it's a classic example of build it and they will come, and they are loving it. And my, with all, what do you call it, transparency? My brother-in-law drives a bus the bus in Cannon Beach, and he just loves his job, and he does kind of the general route, too, but they also, they're a lot of the fixed route people are people who need the services to go to medical care, et cetera, use the fixed route there because it's so reliable and it's just so, he greets them and knows them all by name and it's a family.
It is.
I think it's really people tell each other about it, and I see more and more people at the stands, waiting for it. And one of the friends of mine who works at the hospital and lives in Cannon Beach and could drive but doesn't, she takes the bus because it's so convenient.
Okay. Well, and I've probably been listening to and preaching too much of this anyway, but I think in Lane Transit, which is my district, the fixed route, which is obviously funded by the payroll tax, and it's funded by fares, and there's other dollars, is supporting about $2.5 million of the special needs transportation is coming directly out of the fixed route service to fund that because of the federal mandate that requires that if you run a fixed route, you also have to provide the special needs transportation on that route. TriMet is 10 times that amount. So you're looking at about $25 million that the fare, the TriMet, the payroll tax, the people riding the bus are subsidizing that type of a system, which I'm not saying it's, it's a bad system, but federal government should have ponied up some money when they did this.
Yes.
I will say that. So that's the dilemma, is that that's how much we're down on our funding of that particular service.
Mm-hmm.
So if $25 million at TriMet and $2.5 million at Lane Transit, that's a hole that's sitting there. So there's my soapbox. And I have another question.
Right there with you.
Are you following the federal stimulus and what kind of funding there might be in that package for
the Chair Byer, absolutely, and you have to stay on top of it every day because it changes every day. But one of the latest analysis, I think it was the House bill, not the Senate bill, indicated that there could be anywhere from $11 or $12 million for rural, non-MPO areas. They would get their money directly through FTA. We would handle $11 or $12 million for non-MPO areas, primarily for capital. So this is not to help with operations, but certainly there's a huge need for vehicles. And we'll be working with our advisory committee here very quickly about what that game plan looks like. In terms of how do we best use that money in the time frames that have been dictated. And certainly placing orders for vehicles would be one way that they could take full advantage of that federal stimulus money. Those numbers will probably change as they go through the Senate and they work together and come something out. But we're trying to stay very closely with that and work closely with our FTA partners in Seattle about getting prepped and ready to go so that the process by which we select the projects and figure out whose vehicles get replaced can be as streamlined as possible.
Okay. thank you. I don't see any more questions, so I appreciate you coming today.
Well, thank you very much. I hope I didn't embarrass anybody, especially
myself.
And
with that, I am going to adjourn committee. Thank you.